51. The younger Langdon leads us on a winding path through the network of tunnels I didn't know existed until today. While some of this infrastructure might be new, Langdon is familiar enough with it for me to know most of it must have existed in my time. Or he has a really good sense of direction. As head of security, I should have known about all this, but it was kept secret. This Langdon might not yet be the evil, twisted, broken version of himself, but he's not fully trusting of other people, which also makes him a bit untrustworthy. Or at least paranoid. I think he's on our side for now, but if push comes to shove, I don't think I'll be able to count on him. But all he has to do is take me to his older self. Once he does that, he can sit out what comes next. We stop at the base of a ladder so shiny and new I'm not sure it's been used much at all. "What is all this?" Levi asks. "These tunnels." "Infrastructure," Langdon says. "For the collider, power conduits, stabilizers, venting, cooling. They serve a large number of..." "Uh-huh." Flores is either uninterested or not buying the explanation. "Particle colliders are... unpredictable." Langdon rubs his forehead, looking a bit nervous, no doubt worrying that he might think he and his doppelganger have more in common than he'd like to admit. And he wouldn't be wrong. When CERN was first activated, many were convinced that it would create a black hole that would swallow the Earth. Some still believe that its activation merged to neighboring dimensions of reality, resulting in the Mandela effect. He pauses to look at four sets of confused eyes. A large number of people remember Nelson Mandela dying while in prison in the 1980s, even though he didn't. People disagree about other seemingly well-known facts as well. The color of C-3PO's leg, the number of U.S. states, the name of Jiffy Peanut Butter. "It's Jif," Levi says. "Is it?" Langdon's nervousness fades as he relaxes into the world of the theoretical. Large portions of the population remember history, including recent history, very differently. "It's not impossible that..." "Get to the point," I say, putting Owen down in preparation for the climb ahead. "The point is that I was trying to prepare for anything."
"I reckon you failed on that account,"
Levi says. "Worse than that." Langdon is heavy with regret. "I think my caution provided my future self with the means to warp space-time. I'm to blame for all of this." Taking ownership of his mistakes is a big step toward gaining my trust, but he's still got a mountain to climb. My instinct is to say something encouraging, to put him at ease, but my engine is burning on rage. Compassion is somewhere in my rearview mirror. I point up the ladder. "Where will this take us?" Langdon blinks out of his malaise. "Storage Shed B, or rather, where Storage Shed B once stood." "It's a warehouse now," Flores adds. "We weren't sure what was in it." Not knowing what's above is tactically frustrating, but doesn't really matter. We're going up. I can find my way to the main building from there, but we'll still need Langdon to guide me to himself. The real problem is that once we poke our heads above ground, we'll be visible to security, if they're paying attention. But they've got bigger problems at the moment.
"Would you like me to stay here with the boy?"
Langdon asks. Owen takes my hand and squeezes. A distant part of me appreciates the offer. Danger lies ahead. There's no doubt about that. But we're both the only family we have left. I won't leave him behind, and he wouldn't let me. Cassie knows that as well as I do and has no trouble reading our body language. She nudges Langdon with her pistol. "All we need you to do is poke your head up and let us know if the coast is clear." "Yes," he says, taking hold of the rungs. "Of course." He climbs up fast, showing no fear of what might lie in wait. That's a good sign, until something somewhere explodes, sending a tremor through the ground.
"It's a flux,"
Langdon shouts, wrapping his arms around the ladder and clutching his eyes shut. We all do the same, sharing the ladder, anchoring ourselves to the floor, but I'm not sure any of us will have the strength to resist a powerful upwelling of space and time. At least there is a roof over our heads. When nothing happens, I realize the truth. Just an explosion.
"That was one hell of an explosion," Levi says.
"Tsul-Kalu must be getting closer."
"It has a name?"
Langdon's astonishment is almost comical.
"And it's pissed,"
I say, motioning for Flores to head up next. "So get the lead out." Flores hustles up the ladder, forcing Langdon to match his pace. The scientist reaches the top, unlocks the hatch, and grunts as he shoves it up. The sounds of battle slip through the opening. Shouts commingle with gunfire and, above it all, laughter. Tsul Kalu is still enjoying himself. Langdon looks back and forth and says, "All clear," and then climbs out. Flores follows quick on his heels. He's out of the hatch for just a few seconds before looking back down and saying, "Good to go." While Levi starts up, I crouch beside Owen. "I'll be right behind you."
"I know,"
he says, trying to sound brave, but he's unable to hide the quiver in his lip. He's burning with emotion, for our father and for the chaos he knows lies ahead. We should be hurrying, but I don't think we'll get another chance to really connect once we reach the top. And since I can't be sure both of us will make it through what comes next, I decide to say my piece now. "I know what you lost today. I know exactly how you're feeling. It's going to attack you more fiercely than anything we face up there. I want you to fight it, to not give in to it. I want you to rise above it. That's what Dad would want, too."
"Isn't that what you did?"
he asks. "I hid from it, separated myself from the people who mattered most." I glance at Cassie, who's watching with a mixture of impatience and adoration. "And while I can't get that time back, you have it all ahead of you."
"We'll rise above it together,"
he says, getting a smile out of me. "Fucking right we will," I say, and he reciprocates the grin.
"We're going to have to do something about your language,"
he says, doing a spot-on imitation of our father, and for the first time I really see how much I look and sound like him, then and now. I've lost my father twice now, but he lives on in both of us. I motion to the ladder and Owen charges up. I follow right behind him, with Cassie bringing up the rear. We emerge into a warehouse that is far larger than storage shed B used to be. Most of the concrete floor is empty, but a few of the small tank drones armed with miniguns are parked at charging stations. At the far end, the warehouse doors are wide open, the sounds of battle echoing through the broad space. I duck down when errant minigun fire tears a line of holes through the metal walls 20 feet above us.
"This way,"
Langdon says, running for an exit on the building's side. A pair of nervous synergy workers step out of a back room, their arms laden with ammunition for the parked drones. They're clearly not thrilled to be there. Even more so when they spot us.
"Hey!"
the chubbier of the pair shouts. "The hell you think you're doing here?" Despite being grunts, both of them wear sidearms. I'm about to raise my weapon and kill both. I'm not willing to risk a gunfight when they spot Langdon and their body language shifts into submission.
"Sorry, sir,"
chubby says, eyes on the floor. "I didn't know you were. Carry on," Langdon says with a dismissive wave. "There's no time for words." I hadn't pegged Langdon for an actor, but his delivery is perfect. Of course, it's probably easy to act like your meaner self while the lives of several thousand people weigh on your shoulders, not to mention having a giant man-killer on the rampage. We hurry on our way and leave the two men to their work. Langdon pushes through the exit, looks right, shouts, and dives to the ground. A tank drone careens through the air above him, crashing somewhere in the distance. Flores steps out behind him, scans the area, and yanks the man up by the back of his belt.
"Move!"
I step out under the dark purple sky, already thick with stars, holding Owen around my waist again, handgun drawn and ready for action. A pair of guards, men I don't know, rush toward us. Flores flinches at their approach, but I stop him with a hushed, "Wait." The two men spot us and keep on moving. With Tsul Kalu around, they're not seeing us as a threat. And even if they did, I'm sure Langdon's face would get us where we need to go. But the two men barely give us a second glance as they charge past. And then I see why. The building where we had been kept earlier has been partially destroyed. The people who'd been held within its brick walls are now emerging and scattering, fleeing the madness. I want to tell them to stop, to go back and keep a roof over their heads, but there are too many running in different directions. The only way I can help them is to stop the next flux.
"Go, go, go!"
I shout, following Langdon across an open courtyard.
"Look out!"
Owen shouts in my ear. Three drones fly past, just over our heads, zooming toward the raging battle. I follow their trajectory and spot Tsul Kalu in the distance. He's in motion, never slowing, taking hits and dealing out damage to people and machines alike. How much more can he take? How much more can Synergy? The giant's eyes flick toward us for a moment, and I think he's overlooked us. But then he double-takes and starts laughing again. The way he's moving, he could be on us in seconds. But instead of charging, he lunges at a man trying to escape, grasping him around the waist and lifting him up. The man's high-pitched scream makes me wince. Then the man is airborne, tossed with enough force to break bones and pop sockets loose. His ragdoll body pinwheels through the air, but he's not dead. His scream rises in volume as he arcs up and falls toward us. Anger burns hot until the man slams into the concrete and slides to a stop at my feet. When I see his scarred face, round glasses and wispy balding hair, my anger fades. Robles. As horrible as his death was, the torturer deserved worse.
"We need to get inside,"
I shout, setting Owen down and shoving him past the body.
"Here,"
Langdon says, bending over to unlock a side door with an ocular scanner. The keypad flashes green and the lock snaps open. He wrenches the door open and holds it for us while we file inside the foyer of the Central Science Building.
"Stop!"
A guard on the interior shouts, already raising a pistol. Now that we're inside and potentially identified by Langdon's people, I don't hesitate. My handgun clears its holster before the man finishes raising his weapon. I fire from the hip, striking him hard in the chest. His body armor saves his life, but the round hits like a rhino. The man topples to his back, gasping for air until Flores pistol whips him into unconsciousness.
"Ow,"
Owen says, rubbing his ears. "Sorry," I tell him. He nods.
"Just stay behind me."
I look up at Cassie, and you behind him. When she nods, I look back at him.
"You see me raise this?"
I pat the gun. "You cover your ears." He covers them now and says,
"Got it."
"Why are you covering?" My question is cut short by two gunshots. I spin around to find Flores has just gunned down a second guard who just emerged from behind a corner. Unlike me, he aimed high, the first shot missing, the second catching the man's head. While part of the man is blasted backward, the rest of him careens into a wall before crumpling to the floor. They definitely know we're here, and like the men outside, Langdon is sending them to their deaths.
"Next right,"
the younger Langdon says from behind, guarded by Levi and no longer brave enough to take the lead. I take the turn and recognize where I am. The security center is just ahead.
"Stay with them," I say to Levi and Cassie before pointing at Flores. "With me."
I charge down the hall, weapon at the ready. When I kick in the door, the men inside barely notice, in part because they're all wearing VR headsets and headphones, but also because they're controlling the fleet of drones battling Tsukalu. The guard Flores killed must have come from here, and future Langdon is gone. Rather than interrogate the men who I'd prefer keep trying to kill the giant, I poke my head out into the hall and wave the others in.
"Try to find him,"
I say, motioning to the wall of security feeds. We scour the images together, but find nothing. After a minute of searching, I lose my patience, yank the VR headset off the nearest operator, shove my gun between his eyes and say,
"Where is he?"
The man's nervous eyes flit around the room, looking for help, but all he finds is more people who look ready to throttle him. Then I realize he's not looking at us, but at the security feeds. He points.
"There."
The screen in question shows a solid metal door. Closed.
"You know where that is?"
I ask the younger Langdon. He shakes his head. I ask the operator the same question by glaring at him and pressing the gun harder.
Penthouse,
he says, pointing up.
"Top floor."
Penthouse? Top floor? Why the hell would future Langdon be anywhere near the surface? Because it's time. His end game is nearly here.
"When is it happening?"
I ask. And I can see in the man's eyes that he knows exactly what I'm talking about, even if he doesn't really understand it.
10 minutes,
he says.